Kof Dalet Teves, Sunday the 6th of January, Rabbi Yitzchok Ziskind, Nesias Halev, Inspired Hearts. This week's Torah Way has been sponsored by a grateful admirer of our late Magid Shir and friend, Rabbi Yosef Freilich, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, on the occasion of his first Yahrzeit, Kof Tes Teves.
Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for the privilege of being able to speak here today. And I hope you'll find it interesting and helpful. So the subject is Nesias Halev, an inspired heart. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Moshe Rabbeinu to command the Jewish people to build the Mishkan, so Moshe Rabbeinu called for two categories of volunteers. The Ramban explains that there were those who had nedivas halev, a giving heart, and gave the necessary materials that were necessary to build the Mishkan with all their heart. But there was now a problem: who could build it? So the Ramban says, because when we were avodim in Mitzrayim, nobody learnt any trade, nobody learnt any skill, and so being commanded to build a Mishkan is all very well, but how can people build it if they have no idea how to do it? So the Ramban says that there's such a thing as Nesias Halev, an inspired heart. And so people came forward and wanted with all their heart to build the Mishkan, and they somehow found within themselves the ability to do this. So the Ramban says that there is abilities that every human being has, and he can only uncover them if he wants to do something with all his heart. He wants to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all his heart, he wants to do something b'kol halev, he can discover and unlock abilities that he maybe never would have dreamt that he had. And so the ladies who want to do the weaving, they never heard any training in how to do weaving. They came forward, and because they wanted to weave, they somehow found the ability to do the weaving and all the other elements that were necessary to build the Mishkan. So, how does this work? Because it means when a person is vayigbol libo ledarkei Hashem, when he wants to be elevated in the ways of Hashem, he can achieve sometimes what appears to be miracles. But practically speaking, how does this work? So, Reb Baruch Mordechai Ezrachi, Shlita Rosh Hashiva of Ateres, says that there's such a thing as a person's heart having wings. A person's heart has got wings, and if you really want to do something with all your heart can carry you way above any idea that you may have of what you're capable of and who you can be. And he says it's not such a strange idea, because every creature in the world has the ability to do what's required of it. You find a tiger. A tiger doesn't have to go to hunting school. And you have all kinds of creatures in the world. They have to survive, so they have to know how to hunt, because they have to eat. And because they have to have these skills, they somehow have them. You have a bird, which is born in the north of Scotland, called a tern, T-E-R-N. And that bird has to fly to the South Pole, all the way from Scotland to the South Pole. It doesn't have any lessons in navigation, and it's able to fly by itself, not following its mother or following anybody else. They fly across England, Europe, Eretz Yisrael, through the Great Rift Valley. How does the bird do that? The bird is, Kodesh Baruch Hu gave that bird thousands of mirrors in its eyes, and its eyes can reflect the star formations. It doesn't know what a star is. It doesn't know what formations are. It doesn't know where it's going. It doesn't know anything about navigation. But the bird, it needs, in the way Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world, to get from Scotland to the South Pole. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu equipped it with whatever it needs to be able to fulfill its function in the world. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu did that for every creature in the world, it can't be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands us to build a Mishkan, and we are obligated to build a Mishkan, and we haven't got the ability to do it. It must be that we have that ability. But that ability can only be unlocked if a person has Nesias HaLev, is inspired, wants with all their heart something that may even be absolutely impossible, apparently. And so, this is the concept of Nesias HaLev. Now, it's echoed in the way that the Mishkan was built. Because when they had prepared all the materials and all the elements that made up the Mishkan, Klal Yisrael tried to put it up and they couldn't put it up. And so they brought it to Moshe Rabbeinu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved it for Moshe Rabbeinu because he did not participate in preparing all the materials. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you should put up the Mishkan. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, Eivshar, how can a man put up a Mishkan? And certainly, how can one person put up a Mishkan? Because the boards were over a meter wide and about 3 or 4 stories high. And if you put up one beam, imagine you can even pick it up, that will fall down by the time he goes and he gets the other one. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, put your hand by the beam and try to pick up the beam, and it will appear as if you're putting up the beam, but I'll put up the beam. So, in fact, what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He tried to put up the Mishkan. And who actually put up the Mishkan? HaKadosh Baruch Hu put up the Mishkan. Miraculously, the Mishkan came up and was built. And Reb Matisyahu Solomon said, it's very strange that right at the end of the parsha, it says, Moshe put up the Mishkan. It's not true. How can the Torah say that Moshe put up the Mishkan if Moshe tried to put up the Mishkan, and in fact, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put up the Mishkan? So, he says, we actually can't do anything. It looks as if we're doing things. Anything that we try to do, it's only with Siyata Dishmaya that can achieve it. Hakol Bidei Shamayim. Everything's in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not in our hands to actually do anything at all. All we can do is want to do it and try. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu considers that it is appropriate at that particular point in our life that we should be matzliach in anything that we attempt to do, with Siyata Dishmaya, he'll cause that it should happen. We'll be able to do that. We'll be able to do what we can't do. And we'll be able to become the person that we can't become. Now, further on, in fact, actually, right earlier, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Avraham Avinu, and after Avraham Avinu's Mesiras Nefesh, till he got to the age, older age, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that he'll be the father of a unique group of human beings who we are Zoiche to be the descendants of. And Avraham Avinu couldn't understand how this could happen. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, go outside and count the stars if you can count them. And Avraham Avinu went outside. The different shot him when HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered, Ko yezar echo, so will your descendants be. So we'll be like the stars, each Jew will be unique as each star is unique. But Reb Matisyahu pointed out a very interesting shot in it. He said, as you went out to do what you can't do, it's impossible to count the stars. Impossible for a human being to count the stars. But I told you to go out and count the stars. As you went out to attempt to do what you can't do, Ko yezar echo, so will your children, the Jewish people, be. Your children, the Jewish people, will be that unique people because they will perceive that they have something within them that they have to liberate, that they have to develop, and it's beyond their understanding of what they can be. It's interesting to note that the Nefesh HaChaim, in describing what it means that we made B'Tzelem Elohim, It's the most important principle that a human being's made, but Salim Kim. Not too many people in the world even think about it, let alone understand what it means. The Nefesh HaChaim says, we cannot conceive what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is infinite, unlimited. So how can we be a reflection of unlimited, something we can't conceive of? So he says, the one thing that we can perceive of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he is uf tuvo mechadesh b'chol yom tamid masai breishis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly creating the creation. In fact, when it says breishis boro, it's not in the beginning God created, but in the beginning of God's creating. Uf tuvo mechadesh b'chol yom tamid masai breishis. And we are a reflection of that aspect of God. What are we constantly being mechadesh? And the Nefesh HaChaim says, ourselves. There's not a minute in our life that we remain the same. And we can either be the product of the influence of the sliver and what happens around us, and we just become the end result of all the influences that come upon us, or we can take ourselves in hand and we can actively be proactive and try with the best of our ability, with all our heart, to make ourselves into something. And we have that capacity to do it every second. Everything in the world, anything that we interact with in the world, has got the potential to be the means by which we can become what we have the potential to become. And so therefore, it means that being made with Salim Elohim is living with a constant awareness that we have the potential to create ourselves. And also to create the kind of world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to have. But a person has to be inspired to be in touch with that Nesiyas HaLev. I want to bring an interesting example that, going through the Daf Yomi, I came across a very interesting Gemara, which brings from Book of Chronicles about Kalev. And the Gemara brings that the idea that Kalev ki'ilu noyodo azuva. And the Gemara asks, who's Azuva that he was Noildo? She was Isho, his wife. Who was she? She was Miriam. Why is she called Ke'ilu Noildo? If she was his wife, it's not as if he gave birth to her. So, and why is she called Azuva? The Gemara says she was called Azuva because she was rejected by every man. Why? Because her face was pale, like undyed cloth. She was ill, and she didn't look well, and she didn't look attractive, and so nobody wanted to marry her. And we find that Kalev, what did he do? It says his complexion was dark. Why was his complexion dark? Because he fasted, and he did tshuva to make himself marry Miriam, and not to marry somebody that might have been more attractive to him. Because he could perceive her qualities. She was the sister of Moshe and Aaron. And so he married her. And in fact, he gave birth to her because he nursed her back to health. And in fact, in the end, the Gemara says, her complexion was red like a rose. And she in fact looked most beautiful. She was one of the most beautiful women that there were in Klal Yisrael. How did she become that? How was that potential activated? Because her husband gave birth to her. He was inspired to make his wife able to be the person that she could be. And so he managed to achieve it. An incredible transformation from being a woman who was Azuva to being the most beautiful woman in Klal Yisrael. And the Gemara goes on to say, that same koyach that he exercised in order to build his wife, he used that to save Klal Yisrael. When the Meraglim came back with an evil report, so Kalev prepared himself before he went on this mission. He didn't get a brocha from Moshe Rabbeinu like Yeshua. Yeshua, Rav Matisyahu says, needed the brocha because he was more vulnerable because he loved Moshe Rabbeinu so much that he could have got caught up in the report of the spies, because going into Eretz Israel he knew that Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't live afterwards. And so he was prepared, in a sense, by Moshe Rabbeinu to get a brocha, but Kalev wasn't. So what did Kalev do? He went to Hebron, and he went to Davin, and he fasted, and he did tshuva to prepare himself for the challenge of being able to stand up and risk his life against the Meraglim. And so he was inspired to do that. How could he do that? And he disguised his motives until right at the end, after they gave the report, and Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron bowed down and resigned as leaders of Klal Yisrael. They gave up. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu determined that this is the end of Klal Yisrael. And Kalev got up and just said in few words, "We can go in." And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Because of my servant Kalev, I'll save Klal Yisrael." Where was his training? Where was the source of his ability to do that? It goes back to being inspired to make his wife, give her the opportunity to be the person that she could be. And that was his whole derech. And because of that action, he was equipped to be able to save Klal Yisrael. Now, I've got two very interesting stories which are somehow consequences of this. My brother in South Africa has a partner who is an American Hasidish man, and he told the following story. He told me that when the Germans marched into Poland, I don't know the name of the town or city where his family lived, so they made a ghetto and they forced all the Jews to live in the ghetto. But in the early stages, it was possible to go in and out of the ghetto. And his mother was pregnant at the time, and her doctor was a Roman Catholic woman who lived nearby the ghetto. And so she would go out of the ghetto to see this woman, her doctor. And one day, she came to this woman for a visit, and the woman said to her, "Don't go back into the ghetto. I've heard that the Germans are going to seal off the ghetto, and you will not be able to come out. I've got an attic at the top of my house, and I'll hide you in that attic, and I'll provide you, with, please God, with enough food, and take away waste, I'll make it possible for you to survive in that attic." So his mother said to the doctor, "I've got a husband, how can I just come and go into this attic?" Said, "All right, go back and discuss it with your husband." She put the proposition to her husband, and her husband said, "What about our parents? We can't leave our parents." And eventually, one thing and another, there were 13 people, and this woman agreed, and they came to her house, and they went up into the attic, and she looked after them, somehow managed to provide them enough food, and in order that she'd be able to exist. And he says that you can't imagine what terrible conditions, even though they were family, they had to all be in this one room, and they were there for almost 2 years, 22 months. And half the attic had sloping ceilings, they couldn't stand up straight, and they had to walk around in stockinged feet. They could never go out, they could never get any fresh air, and they had to live with all the private activities that a person does all together in this one room. Apparently they never discussed it, they wouldn't talk what happened, apparently the baby didn't survive. And eventually, afterwards, through partisans and so forth, they managed to go into the forests, and eventually they were liberated, and eventually ended up in America. And when the first grandchild had a chasna in America, they brought this lady, this Roman Catholic doctor, to the chasna in America. And at the chasna, there were over 200 people who came from these 13. I would imagine today, being Hasidim, there must be 2,000, 3,000, who knows how many. And they asked her why she did it. And she said, "I'm a religious woman, and I love my country, Poland. And I read in the Bible that when God wanted to destroy the Jewish people, after the spies came back, Caleb stood up. And through his one action, he saved the Jewish people. And I hope through this action which I did, and perhaps other Poles would do the same thing, God would save Poland. And unfortunately, there doesn't seem to have been enough of a schuss to have saved Poland at that point. So the action with this Nesia Salev on the part of Kalev, over 3,000 years later, saved the lives of 13 Jews and all the descendants that come from them. Interestingly, I've got another story, very, very different story. There was a very interesting lady called Ruth. She originally was born a non-Jew, Catholic, and she was from Belgium. And she and her mother apparently helped Jews during the war. And she decided to convert to Judaism. And she got it into her head that she wants to marry nobody other than Amram Blau, who at that time was the head of Natura Carta. And the very strange thing is, she achieved it. She actually married him. And apparently she thought from them will come the Mashiach. Anyway, how do I know about this? Because she used to come to South Africa, and I was an architect, I had an office, so I used to make my staff ready, my secretary, serve any Rosh Hashivas or anybody who came to collect in South Africa, and we'd open up the bank account, and they'd just bring the checks, and we'd handle all the practical side for them as a mitzvah for them, and they wouldn't have to worry. All they have to worry about is to collect the money. So she came, she used to collect for an old age home in Jerusalem. And on one of her trips, her husband, Amram Blau, unfortunately was nifta. So I went with a friend of mine, a rabbi, she was sitting shiva at one of the homes in South Africa. I think halfway through she went back to Eretz Yisrael. And while we were sitting there, she was talking. She was saying, you know, people don't understand my late husband, Amram Blau. You know, what he used to do when it was Shabbos, he used to go out onto the street, and when Jewish taxi drivers or traffic used to come past, he used to shout, Shabbos, 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 and he used to make such a nuisance of himself, the police would sometimes come and beat him up and sometimes try to arrest him and so forth. And she said, my husband told me, he wasn't too sure, perhaps it could happen, that some taxi driver or some Jew who has been Mechallel Shabbos driving near Meir She'orim or through Meir She'orim, wherever it is, he might do tshuva. But the likelihood was very, very small. So he said, but look, Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us the chance to come back to Eretz Yisrael, whichever way that it is that we came back to Eretz Yisrael. And unfortunately, many of the Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael don't live the way that we should be living in Eretz Yisrael. And if Chas V'Sholom, a moment will come where the balance will be such that a Kodesh Baruch Hu could Chas V'Sholom give a negative gezeira on the yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael, I hope that my shouting Shabbos, will have the same effect as Kalev and so forth. So now you see, amazing what there can be with a person who does Nesias Halev. It's very interesting. I once heard Rabbi Noach Weinberg, Zeichet Tzadik Livrocha, the Rosh Yeshiva of Eisha Torah, explaining the difference between brainwashing and chinuch, education. Unfortunately, most education is some form of brainwashing, which means that a teacher who has information and understands things uses techniques to try to get the students to accept what he's saying. And unfortunately, certainly in the way we studied in school in South Africa, you've rarely found a teacher who actually got you to understand what was going on. Mainly, you wanted to understand what he was saying so that you could remember it and then reproduce it in the exams. So, any form by which a person uses some technique in order to get somebody to accept what they're saying is, in a sense, a way of brainwashing. What is chinuch? And he said, when you teach a person what they know, when you teach a person what they know, that's chinuch. When you awaken in the student what he really knows deep down, The Malach taught him the whole Torah when he was in his mother's womb. Everything that we are ever capable of doing in our lives, we don't get it we don't have to get it from somewhere. It's there all the time. And in fact, when I thought about it, when I heard this idea, I became an architect. At university, they couldn't teach me to be an architect. How could they make me to be an architect? Apparently, I had certain abilities to be able to conceive things, to be able to perceive space and so forth. What the university did was to equip me with the ability to discover and express what was there all the time. And that's what the Ramban say. That's what Rabbi Zrachi say. That anything that we have got a chiyuv to do in this world, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu indicates to us, we have to do in our lives, it's within us. It's not anybody else has to put it there. But it has to be awakened and liberated. As we say, V'chayei olam, not the besochenu. The eternity, the potential for eternity is planted in us. Lo b'shamayim, v'lo eved hayam. You don't have to go somewhere to find it. You have to have teachers. You have to have people who inspire you. You have to be people who can be mentors, who set an example. But nobody can do the job for you. The person, in order to be able to become what he's supposed to become during the course of his life, he has to do it on his own. He has to do it through that act of creativity, that expressing of that Tzelem Elokim that's in every person. And that happens if you're inspired. I just want to end off, not enough time to tell anything like the whole story, but I witnessed in the course of my life nothing less than an incredible miracle. I was born in South Africa in 1937, before the war. My parents came from Litter, actually came from Ponevej, the Ponevej Rov and Sadek Kedushin for my parents, for Hashem. And they came to a little town, Benoni, in South Africa. And my father made me keep Shabbos. And he made me keep kosher. And he made me put on tefillin. There was nothing in English. I didn't understand what it was. He wasn't a mechanic. He worked very hard. He was in business. And he used to send half his salary home to the family Litter till the war, that they could survive. And I just had to do this. And he would say to me, when I used to have to sit in shul, and all the other boys were playing football outside the shul, he used to say to me, I used to cry. I wanted to go out and be like everybody else. He said, better you cry now than I cry later. Now there was no hope. No hope! There was no yeshivas. And then after the war, I remember getting letters from Azeda. He wrote that he heard the Germans are digging pits and shooting Jews and burying them in it, and the ground moves afterwards. I let in Yiddish, I remember my father reading to me. And so after the war, we found everything was destroyed. And what was in South Africa? No yeshiva. There was in every shul one or two older men, maybe a minion, who kept Shabbos and went to the Gomorrah blood and so forth and so on. There was no possibility to dream that there ever would be any Yiddishkeit in South Africa. In fact, I thought I was the last frum boy in the world. There wasn't connections to know what's going in the rest of the world. And I saw a miracle. A miracle. Rabbi Zalse, Zeiket Tzadke Livrocha, and his brother-in-law, Betzvi Lieberman, they one day called a meeting, and they said, there'll never be Yiddishkeit in South Africa until we have people learning Torah all the day. We've got to make a kollel in Johannesburg. Everybody looked at him like he's crazy. And all the Talmidim, all people in Johannesburg were activists, they were all working for Yiddishkeit. A kollel? Nah, they must be shochtim in the morning, and they can teach in the afternoon, they must teach in the cheder. No such thing. He said, no, it has to be. And Reb Zvi Lieberman was inspired, and after meetings and meetings and meetings, one day he vanished. And he came to England. And he managed to convince Rabbi Shakovitsi, Zeichel Tzadik Livrocha, that there's people who want a kollel in South Africa, must come to South Africa and make a kollel. And he brought out, there came five people, five of Reichim, to South Africa. And they thought, you know what, we'll just have, they'll learn, which is why they came. They came to South Africa because they knew they'd be able to learn in a calm environment. And that time in South Africa was still a bit calm. And they'll give shiurim to some balabatim. I just want to say, I don't know how, but I got inspired. I had lived in Gateshead because I happened to go to university nearby for 3.5 years, and I saw a Torah world. I said, gee, how can the Torah world be shown to South African people who've never seen such a thing? And a kollel arrived. Geitzid arrived in South Africa. What can you do? How can you do anything? And so, slowly, slowly, I started to get students to come for Shabbos, to stay with the Dasha Shurim. And you'll see today a community where, I don't know, most probably 30-40% of South African Jews are Shomer Mitzvahs. And you'll see people walking the street with a Gemara under their hand. They start Shiurim at Orsa Mayach in Johannesburg at 5:30 in the morning. You'll see a world, a dream, impossible. But the impossible can be achieved with Nesiyas Halev. You can't do it. It can't be done. That's what the rabbis always, they all gave up. And so Baruch Hashem, I saw that miracle, and it's inspiration to know that there is such a thing as a Siyata Dishmaya, and please God, we should all be able to stimulate that Nesiyas Halev that we potentially have with our families and so forth. Thank you very much.